Hello, and welcome to episode number 112 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Throughout the course of this podcast, we've been weaving together topics often discussed in isolation, topics including UFOs, psychic phenomena, and near-death experiences, among others. Research into these topics not only shows that they overlap in terms of who experiences them and how they are changed as a result, but they also all point to a particular kind of realityscape, one composed of, for lack of a better term, mind. Mind expressed both individually and collectively and everywhere in between. Fascinatingly and consequentially, these mind forms seem to interpenetrate with porous boundaries that allow us both a temporary and meaningful sense of individuality, while also affording us the ability to tune into each other and to the various non-human beings all around us, as well as into the very fabric of multidimensional reality itself, which is yet again a matter of mind, a mindscape, if you will. While the data around these matters are overwhelming, old habits tend to die hard, which is to say, even within ufology, there has been a long-standing tendency to push the so-called woo aspects of the phenomenon to the fringes, often leaving those who've actually had the experiences with the phenomenon to discuss these anomalous events amongst themselves, while the nuts and boltsers, so to speak, carry on discussing the supposed craft and the beings arriving from Alpha Centauri. Part of the reasoning for the more nuts and bolts crowd, of course, arises from a desire to see this topic make more of a dent in the mainstream by forcing the government to come clean about what it knows about these otherworldly matters and the programs it has stood up to investigate them. Needless to say, things for these kinds of folks have taken a bit of a left turn of late, because the details arising from those very government programs are suggesting the so-called woo is right at the heart of this entire matter. Recent whistleblowers like Jacob Barber have emerged to not only confirm that the government, along with various defense contractors, has been engaged in historic UFO recovery programs, but also that human beings seem to be able to both contact and even summon these vehicles through the power of mental intention alone. And so here we are again at the intersection of mind and mind. Mind that allows for effortless interspecies communication, and mind to call and control the anomalous craft. To say this is a shock to the system for modern Western civilization is an understatement of enormous proportions. After all, many Westerners still orient around the notion that mind is nothing more than a temporary epiphenomenon of material stuff. And yet, the point of convergence that we've been exploring the last few years on this podcast suggests that model of reality is fully upside down, having missed the forest for the proverbial trees. This has major implications in a whole host of ways, but perhaps one of the most striking involves the fact that various non-human intelligences can, and indeed have been, interacting with humanity all along, sometimes in direct ways, and sometimes through mental influence alone, from behind the scenes, if you will. And considering the evidence arising suggests that while some of these intelligences have our best interests at heart, others do not, this ignorance on the part of modern society is highly consequential. Furthermore, this process of distracting us away from the true nature of things, perhaps willfully imposed by both human and non-human forces, has not only made us easily manipulable, but it has also kept us in the dark as to our true potential, a potential, again, that goes to the very heart of our true nature and to the heart of reality itself. And these are the pivotal matters that we'll seek to explore in this, the 112th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. As we begin this week's episode, I just have a couple of announcements to make. First of all, we're only now a couple of weeks away from two new courses I'll be offering through my Essence of Being initiative. The first course is Expanding Awareness. This is the fourth time I've offered this course. And in this course, we explore some of the interiority and ways that you can become more acquainted with the inner energies that are at play here, some of the very things we're going to be discussing today. So in that class, we both look into expanding our interior awareness, our energetic awareness, as well as understanding how development works in society in external ways. So we look at both interior and exterior awareness in a very holistic way. And the second course I'll be offering is titled Frontiers of Experience. And this is about, in a kind of survey way, looking over the various contact modalities, which is to say contact experiences with NHI, near-death experience, out-of-body experience, psi phenomena such as telepathy and clairvoyance or remote viewing, all of the clairs, as well as precognition, and on it goes. So that's a survey course looking through each of those different modalities on different weeks. That's a class that is very much about the subject matter, first and foremost, whereas the Expanding Awareness class is very much about our interior experience. And that experiential aspect is also explored through guided meditations, which happen in every session as well. And you can learn more about both of these courses on my Essence of Being website. So that's essenceofbeing.info. Essenceofbeing.info is where you go to find out more information and to register for those classes. The Expanding Awareness class begins on Tuesday, February 18th, and the Frontiers of Experience class begins 2 days later on Thursday, February 20th. Those are remote classes, online classes, and you can also tune in to recordings that happen for each class if you can't make it to all of the sessions. So again, essenceofbeing.info is where you find out more information about those courses. I'm excited about those and always excited about the community that forms as we explore these different matters together. Secondly, if you'd like to support this podcast and the work I do in general, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian or by subscribing on Spotify. And by supporting me, you also get access to all of my content, which includes not just Point of Convergence, but Liminal Frames and Event Horizon, of course, as well as OTC Squared and the various feature series I create, as well as early access to the courses I just mentioned, along with discounts for those courses, and early access to retreats I'm hosting, of which one has already been announced. It's happening at Mount Shasta later this year. All right, let's move on to today's topic. Today we're going to be discussing the fact that, again, mind is central to reality, but that this also means humanity all along has been being influenced by various non-human intelligences. Some of these intelligences are more ascendant, more benevolent, closer to source, if you will, and those ones try to inspire us and help us lift up into our true agency. Others are more self-serving, still in that domineering kind of mentality, and therefore embedded at that stage of consciousness. And again, I think it's important to make that distinction. This is not about good versus evil per se. This is about a spectrum of consciousness development, of which not just humans are at different levels, but so too are these various non-human intelligences. And of course, when you think about it, why would it be any other way than that, despite the fact that some people want to paint this all as negative or all as positive? Right, so the implications of that, though, are immense because it means that, again, humanity is being manipulated by some, lifted up by others, inspired by others. And so that behooves us to be aware of these things. Again, that's something we explore in the Expanding Awareness course. But what's important here is that we think about not just what's happening now, but also what has happened historically, how this plays into our different religious notions about gods with a big G and a small G over time. Who were these beings and how are they related to the beings that are still around now, still influencing us now, sometimes in direct ways, sometimes in less direct ways? And again, as I said in the introduction there, people like Jake Barber have come forward to help us understand that not only is this the underlying nature of reality, one involving mentation rather than physicality, but that also because we are part of that fabric, that integrated fabric, we can use our minds, which are connected to the rest of the mindscape, and actually interact with these various beings, as well as sometimes pilot the craft that these beings have brought here or perhaps have developed here if they've been here all along. Of course, another key implication of this nature of reality and our potential within it is that when we think about all of the intractable problems we are currently facing, both interpersonally as well as collectively as a civilization, each and every one of those can be addressed differently from this understanding that we are part of the fabric of reality itself. We can tune into that shared field of consciousness. Again, that's something we explore in Expanding Awareness. And this is exactly the kind of shared field of consciousness which is spoken to, for instance, in the telepathy tapes. So this is another key implication we'll be discussing today. Not just is it revelatory about the nature of reality, but it gives us so much more agency if we can step into that underlying reality, draw from it, work with it, access our true potential to change the ultimate course of human civilization, which right now, I think a lot of you would agree, kind of looks like a runaway freight train. Now, those of you who are regular listeners, not just to this podcast, but also to Event Horizon and Liminal Frames, well, remember that I've referenced several times now this remarkable experience I had on Christmas Day following this particular protocol, which fully took me outside of this construct. And not only did I have revelations in the place, quote unquote, which again is better described as a mindscape, after all, that's all there is different interpenetrating mindscapes. Not only was that revelatory, but when I came back into this construct, it was so different than what I've experienced before, and I've done plenty of exploring, sojourning, if you will, in different realms. But this particular experience was really remarkable because of the degree to which I felt fully outside of the construct. Now, the reason I emphasize that degree of being outside the construct has to do with what I experienced when I came back in, when I plugged back in to the matrix, if you will. And there's a reason why I kind of playfully use that term. And that's because when I came back in and I kind of booted up inside my body mind, my biological AI, if you will, this particular bodysuit we wear in this particular incarnation, I had a sense, of course, that this is only relatively real. It's not ultimately real. I've discussed that several times already. But another aspect of that experience that I have not discussed so much yet, because I've been meditating on how I want to talk about it publicly, has to do with the fact that when I came back in, there was a certain tainted nature, if you will, to this particular reality scape. It felt like there was either something directly within the construct that felt a little rotten, if you will, or that there was an overlay in place, if you will, that was tainting the nature of the construct. And this felt very much like a purposeful overlay, a purposeful construct within this particular reality scape that is designed to limit human potential. And this has everything to do with what we're going to discuss today, not just in terms of what's happening now. And again, we think about David Grush and his conversations around accords with non-human intelligence. I'm not saying we know those are kinds that are trying to limit human potential, but they could be. When we think about the military-industrial complex, again, that raises questions about what kinds of non-human intelligences would be involved in those accords. And again, I really want to highlight what kinds, because we have a full spectrum of non-human intelligences at different stages of consciousness. And not only is that the case now, but that has also been the case historically, of course. And this again speaks to our religious history. Even for adherents of certain monotheistic traditions like Christianity and Judeo-Christian thought in general, sometimes wrestle with some of the most ancient aspects of the religious tradition, where gods or God, the God, as it's described as this kind of ultimate being, is seen doing some things that are somewhat questionable. And there's various ways that different church fathers and theologians have over time tried to explain away, if not explain, those particular occurrences. We're going to get into some of that today. And again, how this points to some of the same kinds of intelligences that we're dealing with now. So again, this is something that's been central to this podcast. It's remarkable because it suggests that while modern Western civilization has boiled everything down to physicality, and again, anything that's spiritual or energetic has been seen to be delusions, basically, magical thinking from uneducated people, non-scientific people, we're finding, because of the modern revelations arising out of the UFO phenomenon, that actually this is the superstructure around which we have our experience, again, in just one frame of a much more pluralistic reality frame that is better described as these different mindscapes, dreamscapes, if you will, and that they interpenetrate. that, of course, not only has implications for what these beings are they physical? What does it even mean to be physical? Are we physical? Again, what does that mean? Is that just part of the experience set of this particular virtual reality, if you will? I would say yes, that's the case. Now, I've discussed before how part of my journey on Point of Convergence has been about exploring these things myself. And what I would want to say about that is that not only have I come to these conclusions about the ultimate nature of reality being more about mind and shared mind and interpenetrating mind, but this has also been my experience. So in a kind of leading, I've followed this track and ended up here. And this puts us in a place that's very much in opposition to the way that Western society has tended to describe reality, understand reality. And this is highly consequential for a whole host of reasons, some of which I've already identified. Now, as I mentioned earlier on, many of us living through the times we're going through right now would no doubt agree that this feels like a runaway freight train, that for all our technological progress, we seem to be more distracted and more divided than ever. Now, some people might just look at the standard causes to explain that, social media, the rise of social media and things like that. But I think we have to ask deeper questions. And Janice and I have explored this to some degree on a couple different episodes of Event Horizon. And to make a long story short, I think that is purposeful. I think that is part of a design, part of a nefarious design to not only distract us so that, again, we're easily manipulated, but also to rob us of an understanding of our true potential. Because again, if we're actually part of the fabric of reality itself, interconnected with all of these other conscious agents, if you will, to use a Donald Hoffman term, then that means we have access to changing the nature of reality itself. And if that's true about who we ultimately are, then that's not something that can be robbed from us, that just as different traditions have taught us, we are eternal beings, interconnected with each other and existing on these different kind of fractal hierarchies, but nevertheless, eternal being. So that being the case, we cannot be destroyed, but we can be distracted. We can be disempowered in various ways and through different means. And that's what I would suggest has been happening more recently, as well as throughout the course of human history. And different people to different degrees have been able to break out of the matrix, if you will, because again, it seems to be embedded within the very construct of this relative reality. Now, there are a couple of examples that I would just draw your attention to. I could pick many, but I'll just pick a few to demonstrate that we seem to be more divided than ever and presently headed down a dark and destructive path. For instance, one recent event I would draw your attention to, which is quite unfortunate, quite startling, quite concerning, is that the doomsday clock has been moved 1 second closer to midnight, which means that atomic scientists have now put us closer to midnight than ever before in our history, which means despite the Cold War, despite the concerns that nuclear Armageddon would arise because of the foolishness of mankind, we are now closer than we've ever been before to that kind of catastrophic end by our own hands. And of course, a big reason for them setting that, the atomic scientists setting the clock 1 second closer to midnight, so it's now 89 seconds to midnight, is because of geopolitical tensions that currently exist in the world, not just between two players in the world, as was the case during the Cold War, but now at least three, if not more. So not only the United States, but also China and Russia, of course, the Middle East comes into the mix as well in terms of different kinds of alignments that are forming in preparation, perhaps, for this World War III kind of scenario. And again, I think many of us who are peacemakers lament our seeming inability to choose peace, to actually forge a deeper, harmonious kind of relationship across the various nations of the earth. And again, on today's topic, I just want to remind us to think about, is that purely natural or is there kind of an exacerbation that happens because of mental influence from different kinds of non-human sources? I understand that some people think there's plenty on the surface to justify that humans just do this to other humans. But again, the question is, if reality is much more complex, if there's this kind of interpenetrating kind of mindscape nature to reality, then all along there would be this different kind of influence happening from both forces further along in the development and those not so far along that are still acting from a service to self kind of mentality. And that might explain why we seem to not be able to get past this divisive bottleneck nature of our current reality. Now, of course, that's just the nuclear picture. We've been familiar with the nuclear potential to destroy civilization for quite some time now, going back into the middle part of the 20th century. But that's just one element. Now we also have this ongoing race towards artificial general intelligence. And even more consequentially, I would add, artificial superintelligence. And just over the last couple of weeks, we've seen kind of a rocking of the stock market because of DeepSeek, this artificial intelligence engine that arose out of China. And because it's been able to achieve remarkably similar kind of benchmarks as OpenAI and some of these American-owned different organizations that are involved with AI, this has not only shocked the financial markets who poured billions into this kind of development, but it's also alerted people concerned about national defense. And again, people who are thinking about the very future of our civilization, of which artificial superintelligence will have a major role to play, perhaps the major role if we get to it, if we don't blow ourselves up via nuclear Armageddon beforehand. So right now we're seeing signs that China is absolutely a major player, which is remarkable in its own right, because again, China a couple centuries ago was nothing like where it is now. But with that many people and the fact that they can align all of their efforts under this communist control has led them to remarkable technological progress where they are pacing with us in terms of this race for artificial superintelligence. And as has been pointed out before, whoever gets there first will rule the world to a large degree. This kind of makes the nuclear matter superfluous in many ways because artificial superintelligence will impact every field, every industry, every aspect of modern life. And again, as I've been saying on recent podcasts, been saying for at least a year now, while we could be working together to make sure that artificial superintelligence serves all of humanity, instead, in this kind of divisive nature, according to the illusion of separation, we are racing against each other, taking certain checks and balances out of the picture to see who can get there first, which perhaps portends a very dangerous future if we wait till we get there and only then try to deal with it, when at that point it might be completely out of our hands. So not only do we have the nuclear picture and the AI picture, but of course, recently we've also had revelations around the fact that there has been for decades now an ongoing secret war, a secret Cold War amongst the major players on the Earth to be the first to reverse engineer recovered craft, UFOs, UAP, these anomalous vehicles, which demonstrate not just remarkable flight characteristics. And it's important to point out here, it's not really flight as we think about it in terms of generating lift. These vehicles are using anti-gravitic technology, which means you don't have to fly like traditional airplanes and helicopters would at all. So whoever gets to this first has access to that kind of technology, as well as technology that would touch every other element of our current situation. And that's because the understanding is that these vehicles are basically generated by pulling from the void itself. A void all around us is actually teeming with energy. That is to say, open space that looks empty is not actually empty. It's teeming with energy. And these vehicles demonstrate the ability to pull from that field and actually generate all the power they need. That's so-called zero-point energy. Of course, again, if we work together on these kinds of projects, that would point to a remarkably promising future for humankind because, as we discussed in the most recent Event Horizon, if you can eliminate the cost of energy production from the production of goods and services, you've basically taken 80% of production costs off the table. We would all benefit from this. But of course, we're racing against each other to get there first so we can dominate each other. Of course, that's what's really going on here. And that's if we just think about actually using this technology to power vehicles and to power power plants and things like that. But there's a dark side potentially to zero-point energy as well, because not only is it remarkable in terms of what it promises for a future where we have free and clean energy, but if you use zero-point energy as a weapon, it makes nuclear weapons, as devastating as they are, kind of like children's toys. Because when you have zero-point energy, you can collapse space-time itself. So we go from working at the atomic level with nuclear energy to now working at the very fabric itself, even below that. This is what zero-point energy portends, both for good and for bad, depending on how it's used. So we are, in addition to having this nuclear conflict, in addition to having this race for artificial superintelligence, we also have this race to reverse engineer this technology, simultaneously serves as both the most potentially transcendent and potentially devastating technology that's ever been created. That's where we are. And the fact that we're still at loggerheads, still competing with each other, still operating under this illusion of separation, even as we discover technologies that speak to abundance over and over again, you have to ask yourself, why? Why do we always end up in that configuration? Is it something about humankind itself embedded in our DNA, which has its own questions about how that DNA got there, how it's been engineered over time? But there's also this question about mental influence at a both individual and collective level that might be putting us in and working to keep us within this dualistic perspective oriented around the illusions of separation and scarcity. In a few moments, we're going to get into more ancient traditions and ancient history and discuss how the players, the gods, small g in that case, that were involved in different religious conflicts might have been actually depictions of the same beings, the same kinds of intelligences on the scene now. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But before we move to that more ancient landscape, I want to first draw our attention to different mind control matters that are much more recent. So first of all, I want to again highlight something Jake Barber said, and that has emerged from different whistleblowers and different insiders as they've made their way out of these different programs. What seems front and center across these programs is an understanding of psi, of psychic phenomena, and how human beings can tap into the consciousness field and not only learn things remotely, for instance, through remote viewing, but also impact physical reality through telekinesis and matters like that. And again, they can use these kinds of methods, these kinds of means to actually pilot, control these craft, these UAP that we've been discussing for decades now. Now, each of those speak to more constructive, at least in potential, ways we could use psi phenomena. But what's important to point out here is that mind control has been central to this entire endeavor as well. And this again goes back to the Cold War and before, because we realized that, for instance, the Nazis were very interested in mind control and conducted all sorts of horrific experiments, both physical and psychological in nature, to determine how much they could win wars just through psychic warfare alone. And it's important that we inform our perspectives here with the knowledge that, again, Nazism was a largely occultic kind of matter. This is partly how we explain how a modern civilization like Germany could fall into the kind of hypnotic trance it seemed to be under during World War II. Now, what's key here, again, is the occultic nature. So this involves different high-ranking SS officers frequently tapping in to occultic realms and drawing information and power from those realms. And again, I want to make a key distinction here. This is not to say that the word occult implies something evil. Occult is just secret knowledge, knowledge beyond the conventional kind of understanding. They were tapping into this and then being informed by and perhaps influenced by different intelligences in these other realms. And this, to a large degree, informed Nazi ideology. So again, while some people want to just reduce this to humankind engaged in barbarous acts of cruelty against other humankind, I would suggest there are additional elements in play. And again, this completely dovetails with what we've been exploring recently around the nature of reality itself. There is a consciousness field. There's a spectrum of consciousness development. It's both human and non-human, and we all have access to it. And some groups historically have very diligently tried to tap into those fields and have been influenced as a result, sometimes for good, sometimes not. Earlier on, when I referenced the freight train we seem to be all aboard right now when we think about modern civilization, We think here about how many people thought and hoped and expected even that we would learn the lessons of World War II. We would learn the lessons of what came out of the Nazi ideology and never return to it. Of course, this does not seem to be the case. And even in modern times, we seem to see these kind of movements springing up time and time again, and even at times taking over political power in, again, otherwise modern countries. You have to ask yourself again, what is going on there? And even beyond what we're seeing happening now sociopolitically around the world, you also think back to the beginning of the intelligence state within the United States. So right at the dawn of the intelligence infrastructure that was developed in this country, that was largely informed by, influenced by, notions that came out of Nazi Germany. And that's, of course, because with operations like Operation Paperclip, we brought many of those officers over to the United States, including high-ranking SS officers who had been part of that ideology that had occultic influence, now were centrally involved in the laying of the foundation of the future of the United States intelligence community, which has been responsible for operations, again, such as MKUltra, pretty brutal mind control efforts against its own citizenry. Which is to say, these dark and nefarious elements of human nature are not just locked in deep history. They happen now. They happen repeatedly, and they are not isolated. Again, I think anyone living through the times we're going through right now would recognize that's part of the out-of-control freight train we're all currently aboard. Now, before we dive into some of the more ancient history and signs of this influence happening then, I just want to remind us all that the same issues that are at the root of the problems also point to the potential solutions. It's all in consciousness. Every problem that seems to arise ultimately can be traced back to that. And again, a key element here is that we've been distracted from our true potential as agents of consciousness, as an aspect of this underlying field. And again, it's because of modern human society in the West, anyway, that is focused on a physicalist kind of model of reality, that we've been even more detached from the fundamental truths of reality and from the remarkable agency we have at our disposal as holographic fractals of source consciousness. All right, now many of you may remember a few years ago when Tom DeLonge emerged to make some pretty remarkable claims. Of course, first and foremost, he said aliens are real. UFOs are the vehicles of those aliens. Of course, it's more complex than has been depicted in science fiction history, for instance. But something else he said that doesn't get as much press, if you will, has to do with the fact that our religious history is completely wrapped up in this matter as well. And I agree with this, and I would say it's been more indirect than direct, and this again speaks to mental influence. And we're going to unpack some of that now. When you think about our modern society, it's interesting when you consider how different matters of history that were framed within religious traditions are thought about, considered. For instance, for religious adherents, when they think about a notion like the Tower of Babel, they have a certain perspective that is oriented around and arising from their religious belief, their dogmatic beliefs often. And for people who are part of secular culture, they largely think nothing happened. Actually, those things are just make-believe. Nothing really happened there. Or if something did happen, it's been now framed through religious dogma and it's been skewed greatly. But what I think this points to is that something more interesting is going on there and has been going on all along. And again, this speaks to the nature of not just reality, but modern human civilization as well as ancient civilization. So let's consider the Tower of Babel and what was actually involved there. Many of you out there probably are familiar with the fact that this has something to do with human language, a confounding of human language. But I want us to think about the broader context here. Think about the telepathy tapes. Think about communication with non-human intelligence. Think about this shared field of consciousness. And how might that understanding about the nature of reality again change how we think about what the Tower of Babel event was actually all about? Now, let's first consider it from a traditional religious kind of perspective. In that notion, humanity was unified with a single language and attempted to build a tower reaching the heavens, quote-unquote. Now, God confounded the language, causing division and scattering people across the earth. So apparently this one language that was spoken was confounded so that people were scattered across the earth without having the same degree of communication capacity they had before. And again, within this more religious interpretation, it has to do with language, spoken language, that kind of thing. I would suggest more than that is going on. Ultimately, from a religious point of view, this event is often seen as divine punishment for arrogance and an attempt to defy natural order. Natural order. What does that actually mean? And the reason why this is so interesting and so consequential is because what it does is perhaps frame who we thought were the quote-unquote good guys is actually perhaps nefarious non-human intelligence that wanted to keep a cap on human potential, wanted to put us in our place. We would not act on our true agency. And again, if that's true then I would suggest it's also true now, which means the same opportunity is also in front of us. So now let's consider the Tower of Babel from a more esoteric or occult perspective. Again, occult meaning more like secret knowledge there. Here, the tower may represent an ancient technological or metaphysical system designed to access higher realms or communicate with divine beings or beings at different levels of this fractal hierarchy in kind of the dreamscape, if you will. Some esoteric traditions argue that pre-Babel humanity was closer to telepathic unity. Again, think about the telepathy tapes and what that implies. And that the language division at Babel was meant to suppress this telepathic communication. Again, think about all of the interaction with all of the different kinds of non-human intelligence that are interacted with and encountered. Pretty much across the board, telepathy is the norm. It is the cosmic norm. Why are we only now being reminded of, coming back into awareness of this fact? And what is behind the fact that we've been confounded and distracted from understanding this? And what have the consequences been in terms of separation and scarcity mentality? All right, now let's take it a step further. What if the god or gods in this story were not divine, but actually a superior non-human intelligence? And when I say superior, I don't necessarily mean moral or ethical. I just mean technological. The linguistic division could be seen as an act of information control, breaking human cognitive coherence to prevent coordinated resistance. Again, there's many ways this could have rolled out, and the implications could be vast. Now, similarities exist with Gnostic narratives, where an archonic force, the archons, many of you probably heard about that, manipulate human development to maintain control, again, to keep humanity in its place. Now let's think about an advanced civilization suppressing a potential rival. Some researchers suggest Babel represents a lost advanced civilization, possibly Atlantean or pre-Sumerian. If this civilization had a unified culture and technological progress, an external force might have deliberately dismantled it to prevent those humans from becoming too powerful, rivals, if you will. This aligns with some ancient alien theories we may have heard in popular culture, where extraterrestrial overseers may have fragmented humanity to maintain dominance. And again, so often in a physicalist kind of model, we would expect them to be showing up in the skies and dominating us directly. What if all along, most of the dominance, most of the influence, for good and for bad, has been behind the scenes, this kind of mental influence in an ultimately energetic realm, a mindscape, if you will? How have we been obscured from that fact because of the physicalist model itself? And what kind of potential might we be stepping into now as we embrace something more like idealism, this notion that mind and interpenetrating minds are at the root of what reality actually entails? Now, several times in this episode, I've mentioned the illusion of separation, the fact that we believe we're all distinct, independent, disconnected from each other, which encourages us to compete. But that is not the ultimate nature of reality. But this may be, again, connected to what the Tower of Babel actually represented. And this is because Carl Jung and other psychologists have suggested that perhaps Babel reflected a fall from collective unity into ego-driven fragmentation. In other words, a kind of doubling down around the illusion of separation. And this could be analogous to humankind shifting from a more telepathic or spiritually unified state to an isolated, language-based consciousness. Again, it's so interesting how these different elements dovetail together. And with the arise of the notion like psionics that we see coming out of the UFO phenomenon history that the government itself has been involved in, and with the upsurge of revelations coming from the telepathy tapes, we are seeing that we're being introduced, reintroduced to our actual potential that's been here all along that we've been distracted from. So what amazing potentials might we be at the very doorstep of at the very same time as we are at the precipice of self-destruction? This is why this time is so consequential and why how we deal with these revelations will change the course of human civilization in the most foundational of ways. To further elucidate the fact that our religious history might be completely wrapped up in all of this, and the way that we've actually perhaps misidentified some of the players historically, called them gods, or even associated them with the ultimate god, capital G, we are now going to get into a couple of different books that parse some of this out. The first book we're going to read from is Escaping from Eden, and the subtitle is, Does Genesis Teach That the Human Race Was Created by God or Engineered by ETs? This is by Paul Wallace. I did another podcast episode on POC touching on Paul's work, and I highly recommend you get a hold of a couple of his books. So quoting from this book, Escaping from Eden, I read, quote, "As the human population continues to expand, the people encounter other powerful ones." That's actually a title, which in Hebrew is B'nai Elohim, which you could consider like Elohim kind, "who begin abducting human females," that sounds familiar, does it not? "And having children with them. Their progeny are the giants of legend. This strange scenario of godlike beings taking human wives would seem a bizarre plot twist, even for a 21st century movie, let alone an account purporting to explain how we got here. Yet it is a story retold in the mythologies of countless cultures around the world. Each has found a mode of preserving the same narrative in prehistory until today. It repeats in Hindu mythology and in Greco-Roman mythology. It's part of the sagas of Norse and Celtic lore. The ancient mythologies of Mesopotamia recount it in great detail. And in all the mythologies, the powerful ones," again, that's a title, "their intercourse with humans produced demigods and titans," quote-unquote, "men and women of legend. Troubling news of abductions of human females and resultant hybridization also reaches the ears of the council. This is not what they had intended. After a period of intense debate, a final solution is agreed. Earth will be wiped clean of the human menace by means of a massive flood. But not all the powerful ones," again, that title, "are agreed. So it is that a message is brought to a man named Noah, along with a warning about the impending flood. Noah is given instructions to construct a rescue vessel and seal his family inside, together with a stock of plants and animals to reseed flora and fauna and reboot the human population with the DNA of his extended family. Then comes the deluge. Indigenous mythologies from around the world tell the tale of a great flood and the repopulation of Earth. It's in the folklore of China, Peru, Korea, Malaysia, Ireland, southern Iraq, northern Iraq / southeastern Turkey, Hawaii, Finland, Polynesia, and the Philippines. It's in the oral tradition of First Nation Americans and in the Australian Aboriginal creation story. Three times Noah releases a bird to look for land. When the third does not return, he and his family know that land has resurfaced. After the flood abates, the vessel runs aground on a mountain. Now the animals reemerge, along with Noah and his family, who make animal sacrifices to thank the powerful ones for warning and saving them. In the aftermath of the flood, the powerful ones speak of the regrettable violence of the deluge and vow never to do such a thing again. They affirm a standard of accountability for murder and genocide. Even the animals must now account for any human lives they take. On instruction from the powerful ones, the humans now add fish and meat to their diet. humanity will now rebuild itself with the gene pool of the five families, the extended family of Noah. As human society re-expands, the people migrate east of Eden. When the people reach the Shinar Plain, Mesopotamia, the home of Sumeria and Babylonia, they settle and build something incredible. And now we're about to get to the Tower of Babel account. Quote, "This geographical detail is noteworthy because Mesopotamia is generally acknowledged as the cradle of modern civilization. Equipped with a whole package of agricultural systems, cityscapes with streets, plumbing, and the beginnings of metal technology. Here, hours and minutes were invented. Mathematics was pioneered here. So was money and banking. It also was home to the world's first writing. With writing came lawmaking, record-keeping, money, banking, and literature. All these things started in Babylonia all of a sudden. Then rapidly, this package began springing up all around the planet, as if the concentration of expertise in Mesopotamia had been blown by the four winds to self-replicate all around the planet. What the people now construct in Babylon is a tower, a gateway between the people and the powerful ones, a means of reaching the heavens from earth. If El is short for Elohim, then Babel means a gateway to or for the powerful ones. However, when members of the council make a visit to observe the project, they are deeply disturbed, fearing that the humans have become too capable. Another brutal response is called for. The powerful ones use their great powers to destroy the city-state and arrest the development of human civilization. They do this by taking from the humans the language which has united them, confusing their ability to speak so that the humans are no longer able to communicate with one another and operate as a single society." Unquote. Again, that's from Escaping from Eden. I would add again that it's not just about spoken language. It's about perhaps even this telepathic capacity, which is the birthright of every splinter of source of which every conscious being is. Now, earlier on, not only did I mention that sometimes we may have mistaken some of these beings for gods, again, assuming that there's the physical world and then just one other realm split between heaven and hell, when instead what we have is interpenetrating realms that are ultimately all mindscapes, that physicality, again, is just part of the characteristics of this particular frame, of this particular relative reality, which again is all arising from mind, is composed of nothing but mind. That's all there is consciousness. Because of that, we have not only mistaken who these beings are, assigned them to places like heaven and hell, as opposed to the physical world, but in addition, we've actually sometimes mistaken the good guys for the bad guys and vice versa. We're now going to dive into a book that explores some of these notions. The book we're going to explore is titled Angels, Archons, and Aliens, and the subtitle is An Assessment of the Theological Implications and Psychological Impact of the Close Encounters Phenomenon. And this is by Ambrose Andriano. Quoting from that book, quote, "While at Horeb, Moses sees the angel Yahweh in the form of a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush, and was confused because the bush was not consumed. While it is certainly possible that Moses saw fire, it is also possible that Moses saw light and believed it was fire in a way similar to the Star of Bethlehem, which was falsely assumed to be a literal star. In modern times, we can make a distinction between light and fire because it is provided by every street lamp. But in an ancient context, they knew of no electricity. Fire was the only known means of providing light. Thus, if the bush was indeed simply illuminated from within by light, this would account for both why it was not consumed and why Moses said it was a burning without being consumed. It is also unknown how large this bush may have been and what it could or could not have concealed. It is here that this unnamed angel tells Moses to tell the Egyptians to let his people go. Evidently unsure of what it is, Yahweh asks Moses what he has in his hand, to which Moses answers, a rod. The angel then tells him to throw it on the ground, and it turned into a serpent, revealing Yahweh's ability to shapeshift. Again, we think about modern close encounters with beings that can do the same thing. The angel then takes credit for creating the human body and is responsible for giving people their physical disabilities and ailments. The angel is also depicted as intentionally hardening the heart of Pharaoh to prevent him from obeying the command given to Moses. Again, that's mental intention and mental influence. Quoting again from the book, "Origen of Alexandria tried to solve this obvious moral problem with the clever suggestion that Yahweh hardened Pharaoh's heart, not intentionally, but indirectly, the way the sun hardens clay. However, Origen and all of those after him were operating under the assumption that Yahweh was to be read as the Omni-God and the source of all things. So there was never critical engagement with the text regarding that fundamental presupposition. If there was ever a moral problem with the Old Testament, Origen would have either said that the text is not meant to be taken literally, or that the human author is to blame for the error, and even the error was ordained by God. It would be much more preferable if I could simply open Origen's commentary and recycle his arguments, but unfortunately, I know that he had no access to Mesopotamian texts or comparative analysis, nor did he have any awareness of the very real extraterrestrial phenomenon. He, like everyone else in the patristic corpus, was doing his best to synthesize only the data he had in his possession, which was usually regionally limiting. The church fathers also were not able to truly grapple with the New Testament passages that speak of Yahweh being an angel. If Moses was indeed in communication with the archangel slash archon, like the New Testament suggests, and not with a transcendental omni-God who is omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent, then there is nothing forcing us to sanitize the problematic text with allegory or superimpose Christocentric morality, and even the narrative must have a greater moral sophistication than it really possesses. Thus, instead of trying to find a way to correct the ways in which Yahweh does not seem to resemble Jesus, one can simply conclude that, supposing we take the story as literal history as most Christians do, Yahweh truly hated Egypt and never actually wanted anything from them except their destruction. The disposition towards the rebellious Egypt from the Mosaic Yahweh is precisely the opposite disposition of Jonaic Yahweh towards the rebellious Nineveh. In the former, there is no evidence of Yahweh wanting the wicked city to repent, and in the latter, there is no evidence of Yahweh wanting the wicked city to be destroyed, which is itself evidence of partiality and contradicts the New Testament teaching of James if it is indeed the same Yahweh. A positive plan for Egypt does not reveal itself until texts such as Isaiah 19, where Yahweh plans to unite Israel, Egypt, and Assyria under his control. Furthermore, the exiled Ezekiel finds Yahweh hovering over a Babylonian riverbank when he was supposed to be stationed with the Ark of the Testimony in the Jerusalem temple. Texts like these increase the probability that Yahweh was traveling around the planet, actively manipulating the leaders of multiple nations for the sake of his own agenda." Unquote. And again, that's from the book Angels, Archons, and Aliens, An Assessment of the Theological Implications and Psychological Impact of the Close Encounters Phenomenon. So as we draw this particular episode to a close, let's consider some of the revelations and the implications that have arisen as a result of our exploration. Number one, what we realize is that the construct we find ourselves immediately within is more like the Matrix, more like a virtual reality, one that is meaningful but not literal in terms of being base reality. And also we understand that this particular construct is just one frame within a multidimensional reality of interpenetrating realms. Some beings can move back and forth across these realms. Even we, I would suggest, move back and forth across these realms in activities like sleep and dreaming. Again, we assume dreams are somehow distinct from our waking reality. They are actually not. That's the implication here. So what we come to realize is that what we perceive in our waking state is just one particular frame of a much more multidimensional frame. And in addition, there are many beings, many intelligences that are in our midst, although again, space is just a relative term. It's a placeholder, if you will. But because everything happens within mind, we should not be surprised that there are many other kinds of intelligences also with us that can influence us, again, for good or for bad. And that historically, we've sometimes misidentified these beings as gods living in a heavenly realm while we live in a physical earthly realm. That is actually mistaken identity, both of them and of us. We are actually all part of this overarching frame. We are all splinters of source consciousness. So in the very beginning, I talked about my revelation that came out of my Christmas Day experience when I realized that there was this kind of nefarious overlay here where control is happening, and it's happening by distracting people from their true potential. We are more powerful than we realize. This is something the benevolent beings say to us over and over again. And the fact that we're not aware of this speaks to a kind of mass hypnotic effect. Even the fact that so many people in conventional society won't pay attention to the UFO phenomenon, despite the objective empirical evidence that's emerged recently, suggests that this mass hypnotic effect is very much in play. So what this really comes down to is us waking up, us stepping up into our potential. Again, we are much more powerful than we realize. And when it comes to this mass hypnotic effect, what this means for those of us who have become aware, who have remembered our true nature, we are transcending, which is to say, this is about the transcending. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian or by subscribing on Spotify. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian, signing out.